It's time for the perfect blend of business and politics. The Chamber Business Hour, brought to you by the North Scottsdale Chamber of Commerce. And here's your host, North Scottsdale Chamber Executive Director, Joe Galley.
That's right. We're back with Chamber Business Hour, and I am your host. I am Joe Galley, the Executive Director of the North Scottsdale Chamber of Commerce. And at this hour of the day, on this particular day of the week, we are with you in studio on Independent Talk 1100 KFNX, and we appreciate you tuning in to Chamber Business Hour. And I just did get a heads up before we get to our first guest of the program. A couple notes from the office, let's say. We've reached a milestone, I believe, on this program. I learned we're in solid double digits, well over 20 shows recorded for Chamber Business Hour. Not bad since our kickoff in January of this year. And we wouldn't be able to do it without our partner in crime, the Arizona Chamber of Commerce and Industry. They support us on this program, and they are a great participant on the program too as well. So make sure you stay tuned. At the bottom of the hour, we will have Glenn Hammer, the president of the Arizona Chamber of Commerce and Industry, with us to give us an update on what's happening in the world of politics and how that affects and impacts business. And we, again, appreciate you tuning in. Also of note, on the 26th of June, the North Scottsdale Chamber is hosting both the mayor of Phoenix and the mayor of Scottsdale for a conversation on the future of the Northeast Valley. And that'll be at the Princess Resort, and that'll take place at 8 o'clock in the morning. That's a breakfast. For more information, you can find out all about the event. The breakfast with the mayors, both Phoenix Mayor Greg Stanton and Scottsdale Mayor Jim Lane, at the Princess Hotel, Tuesday, June 26th at 8 o'clock. You can visit our website at www.northscottsdalechamber.org. And with all of that behind us, Tisha Diffie with After the Fact Final Affairs LLC. Tisha, it's so nice to see you this morning. How are you?
I'm great, Joe. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And we appreciate you being here on Chamber Business Hour.
Thank you.
And we know that you have been a member of the Chamber since last year.
Mm-hmm, December.
And we appreciate you being a member of the Chamber. We want to learn more about your business. It's kind of, from what I'm reading in my notes, it's one of those things where you take a situation that can be tough for a lot of people, and you make it a little bit easier.
I hope so, yes.
Is that a good way of putting it?
Yes, it
okay.
is.
So After the Fact Final Affairs, Tisha Diffie with us. What is After the Fact Final Affairs? What do you do?
Well, very specifically, in a very small niche, very small box, we do estate closure, meaning a trustee or a personal representative can hire our company to do most of the work, the legwork, the groundwork, the phone calls, the letters, the go here, go there, collect this, fill out that, research this, know where that is, all of that type of information. And then we can come back and sit down with the trustee or the personal representative, go through everything with them, have them sign everything, and off it goes and it's taken care of versus them having to do all of that legwork and all of that groundwork.
Now, Tisha, this is a relatively new business. Is that correct?
Yes, we just started our third year in March.
Okay, so that's good. You're at the three-year mark. That's
yes. Six,
that should show some success.
Yes.
And I don't want to touch a raw nerve per se, but I want to get to the creation of the business because it came from a difficult personal experience.
Yes, it did.
Can you talk about that?
Yes, I can. Now I can, yes.
Okay.
My grandmother and mother and father all had died in succession, and I had done financial services for 15 years. So in the planning mindset I had, the CPA, we had beneficiaries, we had trusts. After my mother died and grandmother died both in Texas and my father moved here, the first thing I did was drag him off to the estate planning attorney and say, okay, we have to update these out of special needs and out of Texas into Arizona because that's where you live now. And we updated those. And within 8 months of him moving here after my mother died, he had passed away. And I fortunately or unfortunately, thought, because I had done all of that work on the front end for him, the seeing the estate attorney, updating beneficiaries, doing all that, that I thought when he did pass away, it would be a relatively quick and simple process. And I'm still sitting here 2.5 years later, and my father's estate is not yet closed because I made some mistakes on the front end and did some things from a paperwork perspective that I did not know that I should not have done. And we had to stop and wait a period of time under the law and had to restart it again. And through that whole process, all I kept thinking was there has got to be somebody out there that can help me do this, because it's not necessarily legal stuff, because our attorney did an excellent job in setting up a good trust, making sure everything was in order, making sure it got funded for us, making sure that we understood really what it encompassed. So I felt really comfortable. But man, when I got into the nitty gritty stuff that I didn't realize was out there, that I don't think most people do, I just thought there has got to be an easier way or somewhere that I can get information that will tell me how to do this or what to do or what not to do, which a lot of our problem was I did a lot of things wrong and had to backtrack and clean them up.
Tisha Diffie with After the Fact Final Affairs LLC. And would you describe it as a planning assistance in the case of death company, that kind of company?
We do have some clients that they've moved their dad's passed away, and they've moved their mother into a nursing home. And now they're saying, ooh, what can we do now that we'll have to do later? What are things that we can do now? So we do a lot of that kind of work as well under our Before the Fact program. But a lot of our work is still focused on things that have to be done after death that people don't realize have to be done.
Well, it's something I think, speaking personally for myself, my parents are up there, and they are in Pennsylvania, retired and enjoying retired life, but I'm dreading the fact when I'll have to deal with final affairs. And I think from a standpoint, it pays to be prepared to some degree as best you can, rather than in the franticness of the typically the sad news that you lose someone in your family. You have to still execute on a couple things. Like you said, you still have unsettled issues 2.5 years after your father's passing.
Yes. I tell this to everybody. I said, regardless of whether or not your parents want to talk about it, you need to ask them things that they might not necessarily want to answer, but you do need to push them. It's not, I think in most cases, most of us as adult children are not trying to steal our parents' money or just hanging around waiting for them to die, but there are things that I wish I could have gone back and asked both of my parents that I encourage everybody, ask them. If they don't want to answer you, even if you can just get acknowledgement that there is something out there, that's really huge, because researching unknown is very difficult to do.
Shifting gears a little bit, but along the same lines, you're a very proud member, it says here on your bio, and prepared remarks for me on background on you, of the Arizona Hospice and How do you say that word?
The Arizona Hospice and Palliative Care Organization.
Palliative Care Organization.
Yes.
Okay. Talk a little bit about Arizona Hospice and Palliative Care Organization and why you're involved.
We know there are a national organization. They just so happen to have a chapter here. And it is a professional organization for social workers, for chaplains, for nurses, for geriatric care managers, that type of organization. And their focus is to educate those professionals within their specific arena on how to assist the family within the context of grief, of death, of preparing for death. And they are such wonderful, kind, and compassionate, and caring individuals that they really show a human side to something that is portrayed as very ugly. And this organization just really helps keep those professionals in line with what the scope of what they're trying to do and the true meaning of caring for people.
I think that's very important, because I think, as you mentioned, it's a very challenging profession.
Yes.
And for someone to spend have any sort of longevity in that career, mentally it has to be very tough. Physically it has to be very tough. It's just tough dealing with dying, period. It's a tough thing.
Yes.
And Well, I appreciate the fact that you have this company and that you joined the chamber. Give us an opportunity to promote you. We have just a minute left here. So in the last 30 seconds, can you share with our audience, how do people find you to find out more about After the Fact Final Affairs?
Well, they can look on the web at afterthefact-finalaffairs.com. That gives a lot of information about us. They can call. We have a toll-free number because most of our clients are out of state, as you can imagine.
What's the toll-free number?
It's 877-922-8332.
That's 877-922-8332.
Yep, two great ways to find us.
Tisha Diffie with After the Fact Final Affairs. Thank you so much for the conversation. We appreciate
you
being in studio with us on Chamber Business Hour, and we'll have you back here in a little bit. We're just getting going with this program, but we like it. It's a good format for our members, so appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Joe, very much.
All right. Stay tuned for more Chamber Business Hour and Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX. All right, welcome back to Chamber Business Hour. We appreciate you tuning in to us on Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX. My name is Joe Galley. I'm the Executive Director of the North Scottsdale Chamber of Commerce. We do this show weekly to provide you an opportunity to hear from our business members. And we're very excited to have with us in studio Lisa Keelan, who is, I guess, the principal in Lisa Kurtz Keelan, PLC. Is that correct, Lisa?
That's right. I'm a solo practitioner law firm.
Okay. So solo practitioner law firm. And where are you based, first of all?
I'm on 91st Street in Mountain View.
Okay. So that's up right in our neighborhood.
Absolutely.
Know exactly where that is. And then the type of law, we're going to talk about all sorts of great things here in the next 12 minutes. And that seems like a long time, but it'll go by quickly. But tell us a bit about why you got into law in the first place.
That's a big question. I started as a debater in high school, and I was a theater major at Northwestern and wanted to do something more with my brain, if you will. Not that I think theater people are not using their brain, but I had my parents pressuring me. I started to coach lawyers in Metropolitan Phoenix using theater technique and thought, you know what, a law degree is a good degree to take me farther. So I went to law school and focused on oral advocacy, and then I was a trial lawyer for about a decade and then took some time off to get my family started. And when I came back into the practice, I wanted to do something that was geared more towards the kind of problems that I was facing, aging parents, things that I thought would allow me to juggle my family life at the same time, and at the same time be able to help people plan and take care of the stress that was in their life. And what happens as we transition, and all these transitions are happening to the families that I know and my friends, and I thought, you know, I can enter and develop a law practice that focuses on estate planning, that helps people prevent the fighting right up front by getting their legal documents in place. Tisha was talking about that, and I think that's really important. You get those foundational documents in place, and then you focus on the family communication. When I came back in to starting to practice after having that hiatus, I had a firm hire me because of my litigation skills in the probate arena. And this family ripped themselves apart, and they were spending $300 an hour on both sides, chinging up the estate, and they didn't need to do that. They had a family meeting for mom and dad to talk about what they wanted to do. In that particular case, the dad had said, in his will, I want it to go to my three kids, share and share alike. But he made the mistake of putting his accounts into his son, who lived in the state's name, as a pay-on-death beneficiary. So instead of it going to the estate, it went to the son, who said, well, Dad just liked me best.
Ooh.
And it became a big fight. That completely could have been avoided with just the family talking and everybody being in the same room. That's part of the things that I do, is to make sure that we have that dialogue with the family members.
Well, very good, Lisa, because that fits in with the theme on the first half of this program.
It does.
Has been sort of how to handle a situation when you have a death in the family and you've got to manage affairs. And Tisha has been through that. I know that you have handled it on the professional front, as you mentioned, from a legal perspective. And it's so important to have all of those I's dotted and T's crossed before something happens so that when the inevitable does take place, actually it goes a lot smoother.
It's really true. And I think one of the things that I want to share with people is that it's not just about having your estate plan in place. Everybody needs a foundational estate plan. But for those of us in Arizona that have guns, and lots of us are gun enthusiasts, it's really important to have, in my opinion, to have a gun trust. And that's one of the things I wanted to share with your listeners today, because gun trusts not only allow you to determine who's going to ultimately receive your weapons, but the ones that I draft set forth all the federal laws and all the Arizona laws that make sure you're not committing an accidental felony, that you're not inadvertently giving them to people that aren't allowed to possess them, whether it's in your lifetime or whether it's on when you die. Certain people can't have those guns. And gun trusts deal with two types of weapons. They deal with Class 3 weapons, which are the ones that you have to register with the NFA, and they deal with ordinary handguns and things that you don't have to register. For Class 3 weapons, having a gun trust when you buy your weapon, it bypasses the need for a certified law enforcement officer signature, which is a really nice thing if you want those kind of weapons. You want machine guns or suppressors or short-barreled shotguns or rifles, that kind of thing. But there are a whole lot of rules that go along with that. And what I have found in the estate arena, because it happened in my family, my brother was a gun owner and a big enthusiast, and he died when he was 38 years old and left Class 3 weapons. Mm. We didn't know that that was a problem. In fact, we have them 20 years later. We have now learned, since I got into this area fairly recently, that we have contraband. It's not legal for us to own them. It's a felony. And so we have to deal with that issue now. And I think that you see a lot of people whose parents have been in the military have those kinds of concerns in Arizona.
Interesting. Lisa Keelan with Lisa Kurtz Keelan, private law practice in North Scottsdale, 91st and Mountain View. Just real quickly, because those are challenging issues, and we will delve into it a little bit further. I've got some questions based on you raising the idea of a gun trust for you. I'm a gun owner myself, so I have some initial thoughts. But where do people find you when they want to know more about how you can help them in this particular area or anything else related to estates?
Well, they can go to my website, which is aheadofthecurvelaw.com. They can come to my office on 91st Street in Mountain View, but they probably want to call me first and set up an appointment. And that number is 480-922-5552.
All right. So you're tuned into Chamber Business Hour. My name is Joe Galli. I'm the executive director of the North Scottsdale Chamber. With us in studio, Lisa Keelan, who is with Lisa Kurtz Keelan, PLC. Private law practice, 480-922-5552 to get a hold of Lisa. You raised the idea of gun trusts, and I have to say that it's an interesting one, because there are so many overlapping laws. There are the federal laws, and then the state has laws. Are you just concerned when you have a death in the family and guns transfer hands, mostly about what the federal law transfer rights are, or are there state regulations too as well?
There are state regulations, and not just in your state. It depends on whether you're going to have your weapons go to somebody that lives in another state. Let's say your kids, you want to give them to your children, and your kids live in different states. You have to look at Arizona law first, and then at the laws of each of the states that those weapons might be going to. You have to figure out what kind of weapons they are. Are they weapons that are allowed in each of those jurisdictions? Are the people that are going to receive those weapons allowed to possess them federally or within the state jurisdiction?
That's right. That's right. Because a lot of times, if you've been convicted of a felony, you're not allowed to have a firearm in your possession for a certain number of years. Isn't that correct?
It's absolutely true. And the other thing that's interesting that I think a lot of people don't know, and hopefully it doesn't apply to lots of folks, but if you had a misdemeanor domestic violence conviction some point in the past, and it was a conviction, you're not allowed to possess a weapon.
Is there a term on that? I'm curious.
No, not unless it's expunged.
Okay. Wow. Yeah.
I mean, you can't have a weapon federally if you have, if you're addicted to any kind of an unlawful or not an unlawful, but a controlled substance.
Right.
You can't if you have, if you're a juvenile under age 18 without written parental permission. And that all of these rules depend on the types of weapons and things. But generally speaking, you can't if you're an illegal immigrant. You can't if you've been a dishonorably discharged veteran. And the list goes on. I mean, there's just a lot. And some of Arizona overlaps and some of it doesn't. And some of it has different language and different clauses, and that's where it helps to have it laid out for you in a document that you can understand.
Yeah, and I think that you make a good point there, in fact, that there are so many variations of what really applies, and they're case by case specific, because if your kids live in Detroit and you got to ship your firearms to Michigan or Florida, you probably have interstate line transfer rights. You have to send it to a gun store. They would probably have to register it in their name. Even if they had a concealed carry permit in the state of Michigan, it might not cover firearms coming from Arizona.
And the concealed weapons laws vary from state to state, jurisdiction to jurisdiction. But you don't – certain class threes, you can't even
– you
wouldn't
want to
just ship them. No, you wouldn't want to ship them. And in fact, if it's part of an estate, you have a reasonable time to get them titled in the correct person's name, the heir's name or the trustee – you know, the beneficiary of the trust's name or whatnot. But – you can't possess them. You can't transfer them if they are not in your name. It is a felony. It's serious stuff. And you have a reasonable time. It's not more clearly defined than that to deal with these things. And so what is that reasonable time? And how many weapons are we dealing with? And it's the kind of thing that if you know you have a class three weapon, even now, I mean, this is the part where you take the stress off of yourself. Resolve those situations now. Get your family conflicts dealt with now. Get your gun issues dealt with now so that when you're in an emotional, stressful situation because right. of the death of a loved one or, you know, they're now in a hospitalization situation or something, you're not trying to do those kinds of things when your head isn't clear. I mean, you need to talk with lawyers, I think, now and get your stuff organized and then breathe easy knowing it's handled.
All right, so 1 minute left, and it's easy to do if you call Lisa Keelan at Lisa Kurtz Keelan PLC, 480-922-5552 is the number. Get ahead of the curve, essentially, right?
Don't you like that?
I do.
I like that.
Very good. Well, Lisa, I appreciate good insight. And
thank you. And
good luck to you there at 91st and Mountain View. You're easily found. It's a great neighborhood, great place to be. And we appreciate you being with us on Chamber Business Hour.
I so enjoyed speaking with Joe. Really fun.
Good deal. All right. Well, Lisa Keelan again with us on Chamber Business Hour, and we will be back here in a second after news. Glenn Hammer coming up from the Arizona Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Stay tuned for more on Independent Talk 1100 KFNX. All right, we're back. We are back with Chamber Business Hour, and you are tuned into us on Independent Talk 1100 KFNX. My name is Joe Galley. I am the Executive Director of the North Scottsdale Chamber of Commerce. And just a quick reminder on what we have going on at the North Scottsdale Chamber before we get to our great partner in the Arizona Chamber of Commerce and Industry and a couple of things that they have for public service announcements. We're hosting the Mayor of Phoenix, Greg Stanton, and the mayor of Scottsdale, Jim Lane, at the Princess on Tuesday, June 26th for a breakfast. If you're interested, please call our office, 480-889-8987. That's 480-889-8987. It's a conversation on the future of the Northeast Valley with these very two important local leaders, Phoenix Mayor Greg Stanton and Scottsdale Mayor Jim Lane, and we hope that you will join us. So for more information, 480-889-8987. Glenn Hammer sitting across from me in studio. It is it's just really nice to have you back. We've had a little Hammer reprieve or a reprieve from Hammer time. But Glenn, I know you've been running all over the place. Where have you been?
Yeah, I've been outside of the great state of Maricopa a decent amount the last couple of weeks now that we're post-session. Last week, I was in Washington, D.C., the Arizona Chamber of Commerce and Industry. We have, when we combined with the Arizona Association of Industries a few years ago, we set up the Arizona Manufacturers Council. We're the state affiliate for the National Association of Manufacturing, and we were proud to have the chance to be in D.C. last week for their state affiliate meeting. It was a great chance to meet with colleagues from all over the country, see what's going on, as well as to get the latest from NAM as to what they're doing to help revitalize the manufacturing sector, which has really been one of the brightest spots in our national economy over the last 3 years. At the end of the week, I had a great chance to go down to Tucson for the Arizona-Mexico Commission meetings and had the great fortune to be in one of the meetings with the governor and the governor of Sonora, where they were discussing different things that could be done in the energy area between Sonora and Arizona. And now back in Phoenix. Good to be back.
Glenn, we're happy to have you back. And it's always nice when we have a chance to be one-on-one on a couple topics. We'll get back to the National Association of Manufacturers. I know you have some great insight there. They do great work. I know your state affiliate does a tremendous job of promoting that sector of free enterprise in this state, and we appreciate that. And I want to get some more details from Washington, D.C. And I also want to learn more about what you're doing on or what you gleaned from the conversation on creating energy in a partnership with Mexico, because we're in a unique position, and that sounds like a very positive a topic and a hot topic to be talking about right now, especially with our energy needs. But first, you have an event, and I pumped this event last weekend on this show.
Thank
you. Because I love this event. This is the 2012 annual awards, and this is where we do this is where the Arizona Chamber of Commerce and Industry, they bring everybody together for sort of the the end of the session. Everybody's gotten a chance to take a deep breath, gotten away for a little vacation, come back in the middle of June, and on Friday, June 22nd at the Hyatt Downtown Regency, you'll have a nice lunch where you recognize some key individuals that were leaders for business. And that's what I get excited about, is that you set aside people that have done good work for us and put them up in front of the business community and say, hey, you know what? You went to bat for us, and we appreciate it. Can you talk a bit about the importance of this event?
Yes, Joe. And I believe in the past we've recognized you and your Julie Pastrick, the CEO of the Flagstaff Chamber, for your terrific work in that particular year and over many years in advocacy. It's exactly as you say. It's a great chance to really recognize some of the leaders of the business community. Our Marquee Award, our Transformational Leader of the Year Award, will be going to Don Robinson, the president and CEO of APS. Don, a few years ago, was the chair of the state chamber and just one of the smartest, most decent business people in the state of Arizona. And he's one of those guys that he really helped a key ingredient in revitalizing the state chamber. But beyond that, just his work at APS, his confident and important leadership within the business community, I think has helped set the stage for a lot of the things we've discussed on many of these shows, of two of the best years in terms of moving the ball forward for the business community that this state has ever seen. We'll also be recognizing a number of different legislators for their great work. Our good friend, Representative Amanda Reeve, will be recognized. Representative J.D. Mesnard, who did just what a terrific job he did moving the tax package forward. And Senator Rich Crandall, who's been a steady pro-business voice for many years in the state legislature. So we're looking forward to the event. I appreciate the chance to plug it a bit here. azchamber.com for all the details.
All right. Glenn Hammer in studio with us, the president of the Arizona Chamber of Commerce and Industry, and they are hosting their annual award lunch at the Hyatt Downtown Regency on Friday, June 22nd. And for more information, azchamber.com. Let's get to the meat of some of this is people tune in to this part of the program, Glenn, because they want to know how business is being impacted by government. You're on the front lines. When you go to Washington, D.C., that's like going to the front line. That's like, you know, we give you the helmet, we give you the M1, yes. The M16 and the AR-15, and we tell you, all right, go do business for us and get in a foxhole if you have to back there. So what's going on in Washington?
It's screwed up, Joe. I mean, it's the contrast couldn't be any sharper between what we've been able to do here, where we could get stuff done, and D.C., where right now probably the best thing you could do is learn a hobby. You know, I mean, seriously, I mean, I've always wanted to
fly a kite,
build
models,
you know, sing,
learn
dance.
Magic. I guess they already know a lot of magic back there because
it's just been, and the folks at the National Association of Manufacturers, Jay Timmons, has done a great job since taking over for Governor John Engler, and our friends at the U.S. Chamber. They do such a wonderful job of carrying the business flag in the most difficult of circumstances.
One of the things that they just did prior to you being there, I think, is get a successful reauthorization on the Export-Import Bank. And we were behind that. I jumped on that early. The U.S. Chamber was pushing that, and I thought
same
that
with
was,
National Association. Same with NAM.
Yeah, and NAM was behind that too. And we had some businesses in our area of North Scottsdale that were impacted by that. Businesses across the state, but other than that, it doesn't seem like a lot is getting done.
Yeah, and I'm probably a little bit too glib because there are a few things like that are important items, Export-Import Bank. We have had some trade agreements go through, but it's been pretty sparse. And when you hear for the major items,
transportation, budget
appropriations, you know, when you hear, get back to us after the election, you know, it's a wee bit disappointing, not a wee bit. It's really disappointing, and particularly I know you discussed this last week, but particularly when you have issues like
mandatory cuts coming from sequestration could be devastating here,
and we'll start feeling that well before the January 2nd deadline because companies under the law have to make major announcements when they may potentially lay off, I believe, more than 50 employees. So in the election season, I know Joe's intent is going up on this one. You know, late October, mid-October, you may have probably thousands of these notices going out in states like Virginia, maybe, North Carolina, certainly Arizona, maybe Ohio. Imagine Florida for sure, you know. What effect is that going to have on the election?
It's scary to even talk about or think about that people are losing their jobs because Congress isn't doing their job.
And it's not a partisan issue. I mean, when you have Leon Panetta saying it's like this whole process is like shooting ourselves in the head, you know this is a really bad way to go about our business. And look, we all realize that to get our deficit under control, our massive national debt under control, there's going to be cuts all over the place. And there's going to be some cutbacks in defense. There's no doubt about that. But for defense, keeping the country safe, do you want to use a scalpel or an axe? I choose a scalpel. I mean, if there's one thing that we need Washington to do well, is to make sure that our defense has the resources it needs to keep the United States and our citizens safe and sound.
I think, Glenn, one of the more challenging things for me is that I've watched that number grow. That it used to be about $9 billion, now it's up near – or it used to be $9 billion, now it's up near $12 billion annually that DOD spends in Arizona. We're all sort of – if you're in tune with it, you're well aware of who our larger employers are. But those larger employers, when they're taking on federal contracts, are mandated by federal regulations to employ smaller businesses to help them with those larger tasks a lot of the time. And so there certainly is a trickle-down effect, if you will, on the smaller employer too as well. It just doesn't impact Honeywell or Motorola or what is now Raytheon and so forth, right?
There's thousands of small businesses that are associated with the larger defense contractor. So you're exactly right, Joe. We've got probably over 35,000 jobs directly related to the defense and aerospace sector. Many of those are small business jobs. And again, this is not a jobs. We're not here because this is a jobs program. We've got to keep this country safe. These are important programs. And we've got to do everything we can to protect our country and to protect those jobs in the state of Arizona.
Very good. Glenn Hammer, the president, will be back with him and more of Chamber Business Hour on Independent Talk, 1100 KFNX. Welcome back to Chamber Business Hour. We appreciate you tuning in. And we have with us in studio Glenn Hammer, the president of the Arizona Chamber of Commerce and Industry. And Glenn, the topic, by the way, we have reached a milestone. I learned early on before programming today, I learned that we could be in the 20s with Chamber Business Hour. We might have 20 shows in the books, which I think is great. I mean, it seems like just yesterday we started this. And we're sort of on the cusp of, if you will, too, because we are chatter spacing as well today. So you can find us on chatter space, which is always good stuff. Your gal Jenna in the chamber office, she does a great job of bringing us to the forefront of technological advances to promote the program. So
Jenna Miniger does a great job for us. The social media is here to stay, and it's a great opportunity for us to be able to communicate with business people, with the public, in ways that were unimaginable a few years ago. So it's cutting edge stuff.
Glenn, I want to get right to a topic that is very near and dear to your heart. And you can see if you're watching us on ChatterSpace that I have. This is the latest and greatest edition.
I thought it was ESPN magazine. You fooled me there.
No, this is Free Enterprise magazine, June 2012. This is put out by the United States Chamber of Commerce. And it says, How to Ignite Innovation. That's the cover. But on the inside, CEO, Washington Must Lead on Energy. Nick Atkins calls for an all-of-the-above strategy from the American Electric Power. He's the CEO. You said you were down on the border or close to the border down in Tucson, a very important meeting with leadership from the Sonoran province in Mexico and our governor in Arizona, Jan Brewer. Can you shed more light on what that discussion was like?
Yeah, the focus was on energy and things that the two states could do to better meet the needs of our people, and two main things really came up. One, there's an interest in Mexico of being able to get hold of some of our America's cheap, abundant natural gas reserves. I mean, that's been just nothing short of a revolution in the last 3 or 4 years in terms of what's happened with natural gas as well as oil. And we've talked about this before.
Yep.
Lowest unemployment rate in America, North Dakota.
Yeah.
It's not because of it's energy.
Yep.
So, there's some positive discussion. There's also a discussion of what we could do to on the solar energy front. I mean, we're building some of the largest plants in the state of Arizona. Is there a way to get some of that energy to Mexico? That may be more challenging, but there's also something going on in Mexico where their state-owned energy company, essentially, is now putting out bids, as I understand it, or will soon be putting out bids for different smaller producers. And that could be a way for some companies that do a lot of business in Arizona, perhaps that are headquartered in Arizona, to set up some sort of solar projects and to sell that electricity to the Mexican utility company. All this stuff is in the formation stage, but what's very promising is that here you have the governor of Sonora, the governor of Arizona, talking about ways we could better meet each other's energy needs.
Glenn, you know that the governor Jan Brewer and I go back a long way. I remember when she was on the Board of Supervisors. And, of course, she's been in public service even longer than that and at various levels of our state and done a number of great things everywhere she's been. We've had many good conversations about her leadership on a number of different fronts in the last few months, personnel reform, job creation, balancing the state budget and fixing that without this burden of a billion-plus deficit hanging over our head year over year over year, strengthening education and doing some great things. I mean, really miraculously, and then handling the wrangles with the federal government with nothing short of just aplomb, just right on point. But we don't often talk about the governor leading on energy. We don't hear about it. This is not shocking, I guess.
Oh, she's done a great job at energy. I mean, she has Lisa Brugg, who is the head of her energy office, has done just, I think, a masterful job across the board. And in one area, you know, I have the good fortune of serving as the co-chair for the governor's Solar Energy Advisory Task Force. They're putting in a lot of time in the administration. It's some of the – maybe not the sexiest parts of solar deployment, but really important. Like one example would be Maria Beyer, who heads our land department.
State land department.
Has put together a very innovative plan in terms of essentially charging a rent for projects, solar projects placed on state land. And she's already that's underway on at least one fairly significant project. Having cheap, abundant energy is important, and there's also an interest in making it as clean as possible. So, you know, the energy issue is a really difficult one. It's a complicated one, and she really has a terrific team that has been putting a lot of time and effort into this, and we're seeing some exciting things. You know, on the solar side, we're now I think the number 3 producer in the country, and there's talk we could be number 2 as early as next year. So, this is some of the other things have dominated our discussions, but I'll say on the energy area, the governor's put a lot of time. And I think one of the things we'll see from the meeting in in Tucson is we'll probably have some sort of special task force with our friends from Sonora to talk about how we could better connect the dots when it comes to both states' energy needs.
Yeah, I'm amazed because we had a well, you talk about APS and the leadership that Don Robinson in relation to the event and the award and his service to the State Chamber of Commerce and Industry, but the Arizona Chamber, that is, but the leadership that they've done too in the private sector on a number of different in a number of different areas related to non-conventional, so wind energy and solar and some of the local initiatives. I'm familiar with some in northern Arizona. They just partnered with a company to do a huge wind farm up off of I-40 in Coconino County. And they're really meeting the challenges because back a few years ago, the Arizona Corporation Commission said you must have, 15% is it from non-renewable?
It scales up to 15% renewables by maybe 2025, something like that. It scales up over a period of years.
So there really is, for some of these others, not just the public side to be leading, but the private sector is led too. Would you say?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, and it gets back to a point you made a few minutes ago. I mean, it's a real all of above energy strategy. There's a lot of good reasons why you would want to diversify the portfolio. You need to do it in a responsible fashion. You can't just say, we're going to go to 100% solar or 100% wind. That's not realistic. Certainly not even close to being realistic at this time. But if you talk about having these resources as part of the energy mix, absolutely, and it's been something that the utilities in Arizona have been very aggressive on. I mean, we had the good fortune also part of the there was a special plenary session on energy, and part of that was to tour TEP's solar energy testing facility. Just absolutely marvelous opportunity to see a lot of different technologies in that energy park. So. It is truly an all of above strategy. It's not saying it's all of above and, you know, trying to close out coal, or now some are even trying to make it difficult for natural gas, which would just be an insane way to approach what has been almost a gift from God. We really need all the above, and solar and wind are certainly part of that strategy and an important part.
Very good. Glenn Hammer, president of the Arizona Chamber of Commerce and Industry, with us on Chamber Business Hour, our partner on this program. And Glenn, just a few minutes left, and anything else to add from Washington, D.C.? I'm curious, in the last couple minutes of the program here, what's your take? I know when I go to D.C., I can feel a sense of power, a sense of decision-making, a sense of sort of higher energy is there. Did you feel that when you were back in Washington, D.C. this time?
Not really. No. I mean, and I know exactly what you mean. I think that there's just a sense that nothing of any great significance is going to happen for several months. So it's almost like the energy I would put is the same energy you might have on a plane. And sometimes this has happened when I've tried to land in D.C., a plane that is just circling.
Yeah.
You know, and that's unusual. And but these things go in waves, and we're going to have an election, and there'll be changes of some sort, and it'll change. But no, I didn't feel that normal. I know exactly what you're talking about, Joe. Completely the same excitement of circling for 45 minutes in a plane. That's what I felt.
Yeah, and after flying for 5 hours, you know, almost virtually coast to coast, getting back there, you just want to get on the ground. That is the worst feeling. I know exactly what you're talking about.
But you're right. It's good that some stuff, export, import, some of the trade agreements, there has been some progress. So let's give some credit.
Yeah. There's still a lot of work to do, though.
That's always the case, Joe. That's why we're in business.
Well, that does it again for another edition of Chamber Business Hour. For Glenn Hammer, the president of the Arizona Chamber of Commerce and Industry, and for me, Joe Galley, the executive director of the North Scottsdale Chamber, we appreciate you tuning in to Independent Talk 1100 KFNX. Tune in next week, same bat time, same bat channel, for Chamber Business Hour.
Feels like we're